Hello, folks. We have the 30th of April, 2025. And this is those darn Schaefer kids, Alfred Schaefer and Monica Schaefer. We are brother and sister, and it's been so fortunate for both of us that we sort of came out of the matrix together, and things are escalating like never before, and things are only going to go faster and faster as this progresses. This is the result of exponential, like an exponential curves kind of thing, exponential reactions. And just very recently, I was supposed to appear before an Inquisition in Augsburg, which is not that far from here in Germany. I live in Germany. My sister Monica, she lives in Canada. Both of these countries are completely occupied by the Jew sort of thing, as all of our Western countries are. And just recently, like a few days ago on the 25th, I was supposed to appear in Augsburg, which is not far from here, for incitement to hatred. That's the usual thing. You know, back in the Soviet Union, it was called anti-Soviet agitation. And Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote all about that. And they will go after you with the most arbitrary nonsense. You have no rights. They just twist things around and turn things around. And that you are, they've got the verdict there long before you go there. It's just to make it look like it's fact-based or something. It's an absolute witch hunt, like the deepest, darkest Middle Ages. And anyway, instead of going there, as because they said if I don't appear there, then they will put out an arrest warrant for me and have me brought in. But then I wrote them a letter. I knew I'd get a few days beforehand, like a registered a letter that was tracked, so I know they got it. And it defined to them basically how completely illegitimate they are. They are not what they are posing to be. And they are, I am not going to go there to get on the stage that they have for me to play the play the clown who's supposed to be guilty of anything. They are guilty and they know it, and they know that everybody's waking up. So I'm waiting now for either, this house being stormed by a bunch of thugs, you know, like they, I know, just going back to Alexander Solzhenitsyn in the Soviet Union. Yes.
Thank you for setting the stage. And we will talk about this lots. And that's a good place.
I'll just say one more little thing, Monica, and then I'll give it to you. Okay.
All right.
Alexander Solzhenitsyn said back in the Soviet Union, and he was talking about the years like in the 50s, actually. So it's not that long ago. It's not, it was really bad ever since 1917, 1918, when the Bolshevik, you know, the Jews took over the Soviet Union. But then in the 50s, like after the Second World War, even, it was horrible there in the Soviet Union. And Alexander Solzhenitsyn said that when they came to pick people up out of St. Petersburg or out of Moscow, he says, when they came to pick up the people, instead of passively hiding behind the doors, the neighbors should have set up ambushes and just gunned them down or had their pitchforks ready and just nailed these people, put them out of, you know, put them down kind of thing. And that would have been brought to a very quick halt, like a quick stop. But people, like we see today, are intimidated, and they're all ducking, duck and cover, you know, duck and cover. If they hide and don't do anything politically non-correct, they think they're going to get away. But it's going to catch up to all of us. But before going on any further, I want to just pass the microphone to my dear sister, Monica. So, Monica, I'm so glad you're here today. So,
Thanks for being here, Alfred. No, that was perfect way to set the stage, because I think that we should spend quite a bit of time on that subject today, especially the state of what is actually the German state, which is a complete fiction. But anyway, we'll get into that. First of all, welcome to episode 3 of Those Darn Schaefer Kids. So we're very happy to be here. And it is, like Alfred said, April 30th. It is 80 years since the free will death of Adolf Hitler. And this morning I got up early to our time, Pacific time, 6:30 this morning, and observed 88 seconds of silence. I think a lot of other people did too. Maybe the message wasn't spread around super widely, but quite a few people were doing that today at the exact time of Adolf Hitler's free will death 80 years ago in Berlin, in Germany. Yes, and 10 days ago, we celebrated his 136th birthday, I think it was. It was 136 years since he was born. Okay, just wanted to put that as a backdrop. So, Alfred, one of the things we had kind of, you know, played with theme and title, as we did for the previous shows, and engaging the system is good, because that's exactly what you are doing, and it's something that you have really emphasized. We all should somehow or other, whether it's in a big way or a small way, we should all be engaging the system and not hide and duck and cover, like what you just alluded to, going along to get along, all those things, you know, like when the masks first came out, oh, it's just a mask. No, it was not just a mask. That would have been an easy moment for us to do mass disobedience, like not obey their crazy lunatic orders. Anyway, but the time has passed since then, so it is getting harder, but we can do it. We will do it. We will resist. Mass resistance is really what is key, and then somehow we will come through this. And Alfred, you are really engaging the system. So I think we'll talk a lot about that. But the other thing that I'd like to talk about is on the psychological warfare front, I have made some observations, and this is nothing I'm reading out of a textbook or out of anybody else's articles or videos. It is something that I have experienced, and I am in a unique position, I believe, to talk about this. And I'll just touch on it now, and then we can go, I think, you know, we can talk about that later after, because you've really set the stage with your action there of not showing up in court last Friday, and that's just 5 days ago. And so really, you know, that's kind of the right in the moment. But mine has to do with the way that people who treated me a certain way in Jasper. So I underwent this thing called ritual defamation in the town of Jasper, which is basically the equivalent of burning the witch at the stake, although in some ways kind of just prolonged, because you don't actually get burned at the stakes, so you don't die right away. You're just being pummeled in every which way publicly, and they really try to destroy your life. And it's a mob mentality that takes place. Now, some of those people that end up in the area where I live now, and I'm going to talk about that, because it is most interesting to me how the very same people, some of those individuals who now, when they find themselves in a different milieu where there isn't this mob mentality, it's very different. And so that's just touching on it. But why don't we go back to what you were, the whole story? Because you had sent your letter. I don't know if you've had it translated into English yet, but the letter which you sent to them by registered mail, so they surely did receive your letter before Friday, I would think, when you were supposed to show up there. But in that letter, you alluded to last November's letter. Again, you keep getting these envelopes, yellow envelopes in the mail, which means they're trying to, you know, pull you, like reel you into their system there. They're throwing their bait out and reeling you in, and you're not going anymore. You're not playing there on their stage anymore. You're not going to their puppet shows anymore. And the letter in November explained in great detail what the actual situation is for Germany. I mean, I've said it in very simple terms, and I said it to many of my friends in jail too, to the German friends, that you do not have a sovereignty here. You are not a sovereign nation. And that's expressed in the simplest terms. And Germany is still an occupied country. And then I think as of 1990, all of their occupational sort of entity rules, even that got thrown out. So since the last 35 years, there isn't even that. It's all illusion. So any power that they have is only because the people think they have power, right? Or that the system that still has legitimacy, but there is no legitimacy to it. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I want to just say something that refers to my wife read a book that somebody had given us. It was called Jews in Berlin, and it was about the Jews in Berlin, like 1933 kind of thing, you know, before the war started and so forth. And there they were giving it from their point of view, and they said that things started getting uncomfortable for them when they couldn't achieve their goals via the court systems anymore, like lawfare. When their lawfare didn't produce the fruits that they had been accustomed to.
Are you talking pre-World War II?
I'm talking pre-World War II. And this is exactly what we're seeing now. See, the Jews, they weasel their way into all organs of government, of state power. That's what they say. Like in the protocols, it's spelled out very nicely. We will have our people in all functions of government. The government is ours, kind of thing. And then they manipulate everything. They manipulate the media. They manipulate the laws blots of toner or ink, blots of ink on paper, as I say, that laws. And then they manipulate what people believe to be happening, you know, through the control over the media. They will change what people understand under different words. Like now, when people have like these weaponized control words are just that. People have certain narratives in their installed in their brains when certain words or symbols are shown or used, and these trigger certain responses. Just like your dog, you know, your dog will learn, you will teach your dog to respond in a certain way if you snap your fingers or you whistle or whatever, you know, you say a word like sit, you know, sit, the dog has to sit. So they have us conditioned like a conditioned dog or conditioned farm animal. And after it passes a certain point and people start to understand what's going on, of course they rebel, and this thing escalates. And then the Jews go into a bit of a panic because they think, oh, we have to tighten the screws now because they're getting a little bit uppity, these goyim. And that's what we have now. But this time it's so much worse actually than it was before what we call World War II, because they've had so much more time to work our brains in their direction, like, you know, with this subverting us and demoralizing us. We are far more demoralized in total here, far more than were the people before the last world wars, you know, were set into gear. So we have a real cataclysmic situation right now. And you started before with we have to engage the system. When you and I started, Monica, there was a certain threshold that we reached, and it had to do with 9/11. It says, you know, we saw the inconsistencies. There was a point where we just says, hold it a minute, we can't just accept that. That's all a lie. It's a fraud. And then we started, and we were both still tied into other lies, and there was, you know, infighting because you came clear of some lies, I came clear of other lies, and we're fighting because we're not agreeing on a lot of things, you know. But as time goes on and we clear all the, you know, we deconstruct one lie after the other, we find ever more common ground, and we're coming ever closer to the truth. You know, we'll never know all the truth, but we're getting much, much closer to the truth than we ever were before. And this is what we started, let's say back about 2011 or so with 9/11. And now the people that never have made even the first step, they were convinced that there was such a thing as a coronavirus, and they went and got their jab, their Jew shot, you know. Now they've actually had Now they know that their life expectancy has already been reduced if they actually rolled up their sleeve and got that vaccination. And they're dying like flies now. So the threshold is reaching everybody. Nobody can say it's not going to reach them. It has reached these people, though those who are dead already in their coffins, it's too late for them. But every single other person who's still alive, no matter what poisons you were fooled into taking, if you're not dead yet, you may still be able to give your life some meaning by helping to overcome this disease called Judaism, the eternal poisoners of the wells. There is no options here. We have got to overcome this disease. It's like a cancer. We either overcome the disease or our entire civilization and our entire having existed here will have been completely and totally meaningless, because their intention, the Jews' intention, their agenda is in fact to erase even the memory of us. What that means is it doesn't matter how many pictures you took of your fun life here on this planet Earth, everything will be erased. The fact that you ever existed will be erased. And shortly after you die, nobody will remember that you existed and nobody will care. So that is the reason why it's up to each and every single person now on this planet to stand up and take responsibility. If you can't do something constructive, at least learn, start to learn. I remember when I was learning, and you were the same one again, we were all saying, well, we either teach somebody something or we learn for ourselves so we can teach somebody tomorrow. Start waking up. Overcome the false definitions of these words like Nazi or Holocaust. If anybody in your vicinity uses the word Holocaust and uses it like a normal word describing some event that allegedly took place, snap them to attention and say, hey, what are you talking about? Are you talking about this magic wand that's supposed to get us on our knees about 6 gazillion gassed Jews? Come on, that's a fairy tale. That is superstition. And nobody wants to be labeled as being superstitious. But believing in these lies is in fact superstitious, because just because somebody told you something doesn't mean it's true. I mean, we should be beyond that point where especially somebody who rapes newborn babies to prove they don't have any empathy. These are the people telling us the lies. We are forbidden by natural law and common sense to not believe someone that degenerate as these Jews are. So I'll give it back to you, Monica.
That's great, Alfred. So, the natural laws and coming back to our natural instincts, like it's very difficult to reach people who have been so put under the spell. And there's an example right in my neighborhood here, 3 young German gals who are just out of high school working on a farm here in the vicinity. And I tried to reach them with a little bit of basic knowledge and information and ask some basic questions like, why would people have to go to jail for having reaching different conclusions about history? And, I kind of was discouraged by these three women, young women, because I'm telling you, they were so under the spell of, first of all, that what we learned also when we were young, and we've gotten over that now, is that there's no such thing as difference between races. It's only the color of the skin. Like, they so firmly believe that. And then they also, what alarmed me a lot was these three young women were very anti-men. I was astonished, and it was actually disheartening. I came away kind of sad after this discussion. I thought, okay, I hope, and I told them this, I hope I have planted some seeds that they may not, get bursting forth anytime soon. Maybe it'll take a year or 2 years, 3 years, and one day you might look back on this conversation that we've had here and you might say, oh, she was trying to tell us something there. So I suppose why I'm telling you this is not to get people down about it. If you run into people who are just so far gone under the spell that it seems hopeless, I don't think it is. I mean, I think we ourselves, we had big arguments with our own father, especially, and about topics that, you know, it's only much, much later we go, oh my goodness, he was right about this, that, and the other thing. Even just the whole gay thing. I mean, at that time, they were only, when we were young, when we were kids and or teenagers or young adults, and Dad was really strongly coming out against any just approaching anything that would tolerate anything gay. And at that time, it was just the very, very first step. Just let's show tolerance. Let's show tolerance. And, you know, I've talked about this plea for tolerance is the first in the five stages. And I'll just read this again. The next one is the plea for acceptance, right? So first is just tolerance, okay? So don't beat up on those gays out there that are there. Like, just don't beat up on them. Just let them live. And I used to say to Dad, live and let live, love and let love. Like, that was my little motto. But the second stage is the plea for acceptance. That's a little bit different, right? Let's have gay marriage now, okay? So that's accepting them into our general society. It's not just stay in the closet anymore and we'll tolerate you, right? No, now we're accepting it as just being normal kind of thing. Oh, wait, plea for normalization. That's the third step. So they normalize it. And remember when they talked about, whoa, every seventh person or whatever, 7% of the population or whatever it was, you know, they come up with statistics that is gay. And then, I mean, that was just when they were talking about homosexuality, not even anything to do with tranny yet. I can't believe how fast that agenda got pushed on us from being unheard of, to me anyway. I know that these things were going on in Weimar conditions in Germany already, that they were doing, sex change operations way back then. But I hadn't heard of that, not until very recently. And then all of a sudden it's children. And it's just insane how fast that went. So normalization, you know, having clubs, gay straight alliance clubs in school, that if one single child was saying, I'm gay, the school had an obligation, a legal obligation. This was in Alberta, and I think it's probably in other provinces in Canada too. The legal obligation to set up a gay straight alliance club, GSA or whatever they call it. And then they would make sure that all the children were welcomed into this club, whether you were gay or straight or anything else, and so that you give support and love and acceptance to these people who claim that they are gay. And only a single gay child or somebody who says they're gay in a school, and the school has to do that. School has to do that. That means taxpayers' money to facilitate all that. And then the demand for compliance, that's the fourth stage. Compliance, that would be what I just described, I guess. And then, you know, basic. And the fifth one is total conquest. And I would say that total conquest is when they tell the children, we'll keep your secret here at school, you know, and that kind of thing. So, but anyway, that I got sidetracked there. This was about these young women that I met. And okay, so yeah, planting the seeds, that's what I hope, that perhaps it'll happen quicker than it took us a long time to figure things out, Alfred. Even, you know, it really did. I'm embarrassed to say that, but it is how it is. I think that, you know, I've talked to these young women, what about all the mass immigration into your country, and, you know, all the people from countries that have a completely different culture and all that? They say, oh no, we can absorb that, it's okay, it's fine, it's not going to do anything to us, it's just fine. Like, they really, really, really don't get it. And then, you know, the whole thing about men, they were so down on white men and German men and all this stuff, and I, oh my goodness, it was pretty sad. But I brought that up for another, I wanted to say, I was a little bit distracted while you were talking, because I remembered that I was going to do this, open another tab with our show so that I can monitor the chat. Of course, I can't monitor it right now while I'm talking, but when you get back to talking, I will monitor that in case people have questions or want to contribute to the discussion, then I can read out those comments and whatnot. So I did finally do that. But, you know, back to your court thing. I don't know if you want to run through what you wrote in the letter to them this time. I just thought it was a brilliant letter. Do you want to do that, Alfred? Like, actually tell the audience what, if you want to pull it up and go through it, it's just really good.
Yeah, I can just do it from my head right now because I haven't.
Okay, that's fine. Just from your head, and then it's easier because then you don't have to translate sentence by sentence.
Yeah,
just
it's
from your head what you said.
It's basically telling them in no uncertain terms how completely outside of the law they are. Now, they always claim that they are the law. No, they are criminals, absolute criminals. And then they pretend that they have they're working for the state, but they are not. They are all private corporations. They are private companies. There's no if you're in Canada, for example, you're a civil servant if you work for the government, and that means you're working for the state. These people are not working for the state. They are private companies, nothing but that. And they are there to make a profit, and they are there to attack anybody who sees through their deceptions. I mean, the Jews have always done this. That's why they the Jews do not govern the people. The Jews govern the governments. That's an important distinction you have to make. That's why the Jews don't have to have much of an army themselves. They just govern the governments of the countries that have armies. That's why Netanyahu gloats when he says, "Oh, we have no problem because we have the USA." You see, they don't have to have a big army. They have the USA. Yeah, as long as the USA is a lapdog, and as long as the Jews control, all these different governments. But now this is a global awakening, and they're going to lose that control. And they won't have any place to go like they have in the past when they just sort of used to take out one people at a time, you know, one region at a time. Now it's global. And they've had more time to infiltrate all of our institutions, United Nations, the governments, everything, all the NGOs. So the response is going to be accordingly, you know. But okay, you're going back to my letter. And then I'm also saying that they don't sign these letters, that no judge ever signs these letters. And the people from the regime or the system, they will always say, "Oh, the original has a signature." No. If the original has a signature from a judge, why don't they send me a copy of that? No, it doesn't exist because they know that they will be held to account. And as long as they don't have a signature on it, they will have a plausible deniability excuse of saying, "Oh, that sort of slipped through. No, I wasn't. I'm not responsible," and so forth, et cetera, et cetera. This word
that's such an important point about the signature, Alfred. And I learned that from a fellow prisoner when I was in the first few days that I was thrown into the jail there. And she knew all about those things. And there's that word for sometimes they make a little squiggle that pretend.
It's called a paraffe in German. And that's just a person who's been assigned like a secretarial role or something. And she with this sort of squiggle of the pen confirms that this is legal. No, that's it. That's deception. It's all deception from start to finish. So I outlined this very clearly in no uncertain terms. And then I says, "And you want me to go and pretend on your stage here that I'm defending myself?" No, your verdict is already written. You've already got it. I'm not going to go there. If you want me, I'm going to make it as difficult and as expensive as possible for you to get me. Because you're going to come for all of us at the end of the day, and I'm going to make the price to get me as high as possible. And once everybody out there understands that if they think they are better off by not doing anything, always hiding, duck down some little hole and hide behind under the bed or someplace. The monster's not going to get you. No. When the monster comes for you, you will say, "Where are all the people there to help me?" Well, you didn't even raise your finger when they were coming for us, and now it's your turn. You rolled up your sleeve to get your vaccination. Well, now you don't even know how much time you have left to even the score. So you better start learning fast. I mean, this is, you might think, "Oh, it's not going to be any fun." Hey, life has never been fun. Life has been a life and death struggle for every single living thing on this planet. Because anything, whether animal or plant, that didn't have an absolute will to survive regardless isn't around anymore, okay? Because something stronger came and took it out. Now, the Jews think they can take the best of the Goyim out so they can rule the roost, but this is a recursive formula. If you're in a race or something and you want to win, so you're going to say, I'm going to take out the best runner. Well, eventually the only one left is you. And you, if you're a parasite, then of course that's the end of you. So this, even if the Jew were to succeed to take out the white race, then the other races will curse us for not having done the job that we are most capable of doing. We are more capable of dealing with these parasite Jews, this vermin, this disease, than anybody else. And by the way, the Jews, they look more like us than they do that look like Negroes or Chinese. You know, I mean, they appear like us. They are Caucasian. So,
Yeah, unfortunately, they've stolen a lot of our blood by mixing. They always mix with their hosts. So there are Chinese looking Jews in China, and there's African looking Jews in Ethiopia. And there's, you know, the Jews, they mix, but they are, I do still think that they are a different race of people. But anyway, that aside, Alfred, the court system in Germany, and every single court is a private enterprise.
Yes.
And every single one of them, same thing with the prisons, they are all private enterprises. And since 1990, I believe, the UN, I guess it was, but I don't know all the logistics. I just know from actually your excellent letter from November pointed all this out, how they basically threw out even the semblance of authority that they had, that the occupiers, which was you know the allied forces,
allies,
the Americans basically, but it's the Jews who are running them, that they were occupying Germany. But since 1990, I do believe that they have been without even any legitimacy, even in their occupation government, where they're, you know, occupying the vanquished, like the victor occupy the loser of the war. So this is only, like, it literally really is an illusion. And so you've pointed all that out to them. The only thing they have is the use of force. Like, if they come with a SWAT team to your place and take you away, well, then they do have that. They have the use of force.
Yes.
But the point is, I think, that we need to encourage everybody, and this does bring us back to Solzhenitsyn, that how they wished when they were in the gulag camps and, you know, slave labor and you know, dying like flies from the hard conditions, how they wished that they had just taken whatever they had at hand, whether it's knives and forks out of their cutlery drawer or just a broom, and gone en masse. And some of them might have been sacrificed in the first gunshots or whatever, but what did they have to lose if they understood it? If they understood it. And so how have they gotten us to this point? It is by way of deception, Alfred. It is by way of deception. So what is the Mossad motto? Probably all the listeners here know this, but we always hope that you share it with people who need to hear the message to, you know, help them along. But the Mossad motto is, by way of deception, make war. By way of deception, make war. So that's not just a bunch of random words. Just think about the meaning of that. That's how they've gotten us to this state that we're in. It's by way of deception that the police and the judges and the prosecutors and the whole lawyer system, they all kind of just have taken on the authority. And like you said earlier, Alfred, the Jews don't do the governing themselves. They govern the governors. They are the ones who pull the strings. They are the ones who are the advisors. They are the ones who are basically behind everything and in these, you know, all these global organizations too. I mean, that's something that it is 2 days after the Canadian election, and it's kind of a big deal that we should talk about that. Even just the fact that, you know, the election is a Jewish game. It's Jews speak for country run by Jews. But what is going on with that and who Mark Carney is? But, you know, I do want to come back to that story that I was telling you about this psychological warfare. If should I do that now, Alfred, or do you want to
please,
say more
do
about
it. No, please go ahead, Monica. Psychological warfare is the most key element or key pillar of their power is psychological warfare. That's what Yuri Betsmenov said so nicely in his clarifying speech back in 1984, I believe it was, where he was, you know, saying that, you know, 85% or something of their efforts is the psychological warfare efforts, basically, like active measures, he called it, where they are doing things proactively to get us believing and behaving a certain way so that we are disarmed. We're not even capable of defending ourselves. It's just like your dog. If you have a dog and you're going to take him to get a vasectomy, a normal healthy dog would bite your hand off if you thought of doing that, but he doesn't understand what's happening, so he will actually lick the doctor's hand before he gets his medical tool out there and gives him a vasectomy, and he can't have any young ones anymore. So the Jew is killing us. We are paying for our death and we don't even realize it, you know, like the animal that gets led to the slaughterhouse. That's what the Jew is doing to us, the white race. Okay, Monica, talk about psychological warfare. Thank you.
Okay, had to come back and unmute. So this is something that has to do with how we are as like the humans, we people, we put great emphasis and high value on our social group, right? And the Jews know that about us. And I have a really good example of this in action, and it has to do with my personal experience. Because where I live is only a two-hour drive away from Jasper, where I lived for 37 years. And many of you know that, you know, a little bit about the story about this, how I was treated there after I did that little apology to mom. Sorry, mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust, 6-minute video. And then the town kind of where I had been well liked and I was well known and I had worn many hats and I, you know, played my violin and did a lot of things there. I suddenly became the pariah and I had to be taken down. And this was done through all kinds of means and methods, okay? And I'm not going to get into the details of that now. But some of the, because I live in a place now which is not that far away, but it's completely different here. It's kind of rural, there's farmland, there's different churches in this area that are quite strong. And so they don't sort of go along with the mob anyway. Like Jasper was this entity that you could call it like this mob. And funny that, because it's ironic, Jasper always took pride in embracing diversity. Yeah, right. Embracing diversity and new ways of thinking too. Yeah, right. All BS. But anyway, their diversity was not quite the same as what you would call, you know, can you think outside the box? No. But anyway, here I just lived life normal, you know, and even though my reputation did precede me, that people generally know that, okay, yeah, she went to jail and da da da, whatever. They might not know a lot about it, but they know that. But I just go about life normally here. And there are a few people in this area who they used to live in Jasper. And now I run into them. And I might run into them in a lineup at the local market or just a place that's in the public. And they observe me interacting with others in a completely normal way and just being my jovial self and also, you know, just living life normal. And they observe that. And now they are just individual surrounded by that and observing that. And they might be the same individual. In fact, they are in several cases that would cross the street to go to the other side to avoid talk, you know, to my association with me or, you know, just kind of treat me with that hostility, maybe not overt hostility, these individuals I'm talking about. But now I think the first few times they saw me, they were kind of like deer in the headlight with their eyes kind of like, but they observe. And now it's like they're normal with me. These same people, Alfred. I think I am in a unique situation here to make this observation.
That's an important. That's an important observation. Do you know if they themselves are decontaminating themselves from some of the lies, kind of thing?
Alfred, no, I don't think it has anything to do with a changed view on you know, have they reached different conclusions? Have they looked into it? No, this has to do with just this mob mentality, group mentality. How, you know, if, okay. if the town ganged up on me, and it really did, like an entity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then now they're on their own individuals, and they just observe that, oh, she's just a normal person, and she's being treated like a normal person. Well, okay, I guess I'm going to treat her like a normal person too. And they see that I don't have horns growing out of my head. And it's just like, oh, fine. So, you know, there's probably some Jews listening to this right now, Alfred, and they're going to...
You know what, Monica? that's an important observation, and it gives us some food for thought. The Jews can start thinking about, what do you think that everyone's going to do when everybody sees that everybody else hates the Jews and wants to kill them? Kill
Actually,
them.
Actually, this is, I mean, this is very important,
Monica. That's a good... I'm glad you made that observation, that even though they might still believe the same nonsense they believed before, but now they're not afraid of you anymore. You're not the leper, you know, the leper and the witch, you know.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Interesting, Alfred. It is super interesting, and it's more than once that I've experienced this with different individuals, that they either have, you know, still have a place in Jasperen, but they have a place out here, or they've moved out here, whatever. Like this, it's not that far, like I say, and there are quite a few ex-Jasperites in this area where I live. And I was just starting to say, you know, there's probably Jews listening to us right now, because they always monitor what we're doing. And now they're going to start to try to stoke up some hatred against Monica. Oh. Good luck.
Good luck. Yeah, good luck. Their luck is over now. They've had too much luck for too long. I mean, you were lucky if you were a Jew on 9/11, because you got the Jew call not to go to work in the towers. But if you're just a regular American, you go to the towers and if you probably got killed, kind of thing. And the Jews were celebrating and dancing as the Americans were burned to death and jumping from 100 floors up to, you know, and so forth. I mean, yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's so many more things that have happened in the last few years, that there's just so many more people who are saying something's not right with
this. Yeah, culture. Yeah.
They might not have connected all the dots yet.
But they will.
The connecting the dots to the Jews is the one that seems to take the longest and is the hardest one. And that's one I grapple with all the time, how to do it in a way that you don't have the people running for the hills instantly when you bring up Jewish involvement. But it is getting a little bit easier to bring up Jewish involvement and various things like the COVID and different connecting the dots. People that I've actually experienced where they did run for the hills just a couple of years ago, they're not running for the hills anymore when we talk about Jewish involvement. And I mean, I guess just asking questions, and I've said this before, and I should practice what I preach a little bit more, because it is hard. You want to just give it all to the people, give all the information at once. But we have to remember that we came to this in a gradual way, and we couldn't digest it all at once. But just, maybe the question, well, why do you think that the Jews were expelled out of 109 countries over 1,000 times during history? Like, this is a fact that's documented. I mean, they'll put it in different shades and colors. They say, oh, there's pogroms and the people were so evil and hateful. But no, you got to always say, well, why? Why were they kicked out? Okay, that would be a starting point. And then just, you can talk about the bankers and say, oh, well, they just happen to be owned mostly by Jews. Like, the big banks are owned all by Jews. And so then people, yeah, they do understand that. And the media, oh, that's owned by Jews too. And well, the media kind of shapes your thought. Oh, no. I think for myself, Alfred. Nobody does their thinking for me. That's what you get back. That's what I got from those German women yesterday. Oh, no, they observe things for themselves and make up their own minds. But what they don't realize is that they've been molded, and the backdrop of them thinking that there's no difference between the races except skin color, well, they've been lied to. That's just pure lie.
It makes me cry when I hear somebody still today, 2025, at that level, repeating that utter nonsense, when we see what's going on in all the white countries of this world. These women must have shut out their brains. They must have been,
well, Alfred, they're 19 years old.
God.
They're 19 years old, 20 years old. They have never lived in in a situation like what we grew up in. We grew up in a white middle class neighborhood, and it was homogeneous. Like we grew up in that, and so it was easy for them to lie to us, because how would we know the difference if they told us all the races were the mm-hmm. same except for skin color? And we only found that out much later.
Were these tourists, or where did these women come from?
They're working. You know, that lots of times people come over to work on a farm. So that's all I'll
say. Okay, right.
They're just working on a farm. They've been here for a number of weeks. So I tried to, I actually lent them the German book, and then they brought it back because they're leaving soon. So it was just to lend it to them. I said, you know, just take a read and just take a look in here. And they had several weeks to do so. And after they returned it, I asked them, so did you read anything in here? No. So, you know, it's like they don't even want to. And I say, well, it's too bad.
Oh, my gosh.
I wish you had looked a little bit.
I'll tell you what, Monica, nature is going to sort out this kind of apathy, this kind of what do you call it, when you're not really caring about what's going around. They're going to feel much, much pain in their lives. Their world is not going to go on as easy as they think it will, as easy it has,
well, that's
as
the
it
thing.
Has been so far.
Things it's will gonna, get gonna, more difficult.
Oh yeah. And that's what, and I always say, nature is going to do a lot of sorting out in the very near future. And there's going to be a wars, like Friedrich Nietzsche said, that when the lies of several thousand years runs into the truth, there will be wars on this planet, the likes of which we have never yet seen before. And that's after these lies get resolved. That's when true culture will start again, or it will begin, because we have what the Jew, I always look at the Jew as their, it is a disease. It's just a disease, a cancer. And every organism does overcome a disease that is inflicting this kind of damage to it, or it ceases to exist. This is where we are now. We are standing here with our backs against the wall, as they are too, but they are the disease, the parasite, and the parasite cannot live on without the host. So this is it. And it shouldn't be a big deal for us to do it. We just have to understand that. And I know people like the ones you just met there now, you don't have to, don't feel sorry for them if they get raped by some, you know.
Well, I never want to think and talk like that, Alfred, because the whole world is in a war against the white race. And so it comes from, they have been so indoctrinated, and they even went to not even a normal public school. What is it? The Waldorf school. It was
Waldorf schools. Yeah.
Supposed to be better. And I always thought, well, they would be less indoctrinated, but it's almost
opposite. No.
I mean, they might've had more fun with cultural lessons and music and theater and stuff. There is a question that always Honest asked, and this was a few minutes ago, actually, and I can't read it because I haven't figured out how to have this open and that open at the same time, but just from my memory, it was in response to when we were talking about all the mixing they've done. All, you know, the Jews have insinuated themselves into their host populations and always steal, you know, genetic material from the host population by intermixing with them. Some of them, you know, and some of them will stay pure. Like they do both, and both serves the Jews very well. But anyway, then she asked if, I hope I'm recollecting this properly here, through that, is it the Jewess who then has the power in the various countries, like non-Israel, that countries elsewhere? Is it the Jewess who has the power? I think I'm getting that right. I mean, what do you think about that, Alfred?
Well, the Jewess does have a lot of power, because even the Jews claim that the it's the mother that determines if you're a Jew or not, and not the father. So if you're born, your father was a Jew and your mother wasn't, then you're not officially a Jew, kind of thing. But this is all just their own laws that they're making. But the female Jews do seem to have a lot of power. On the other hand, Monica, I know Christopher Berlin used to tell me a lot of this stuff about the life amongst the Jews themselves. And they're the females have zero power. They got nothing to say in the marriage. Like they got a shake their head and all that kind of stuff. I don't know all the details, but they are taking a terrible beating. There's nothing to say. So that question is maybe a two-sided question. You know, that they
probably
have, yeah.
I'll tell you, yeah. That's very, very good point, Alfred. Very good point. I think it's got its different aspects to a two-sided question, but I'll tell you what Gilad Atzman said to me. And, you know, please. Gilad Atzman, for those who don't know, he is an Israeli-born Jew. He did serve in the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces. Then he exiled himself, and I guess I'm not sure if he calls himself an ex-Jew or whatever, but he wrote The Wandering Who, and you know, he has spoken out basically on our side. Not that I want to be starting to talk about, you know, like we've talked about this last time, the good Jew, but I just want to tell you what he said in relation. He said to me, because I met him, and he said, "Oh, Monica, you wouldn't like this. You wouldn't like this." But every morning, the Jewish man, in his first prayer, he says, "Thank God you did not make me a woman."
Okay, yeah. I can,
like, let's talk about misogyny. There you've got the misogyny right there. The Jewish man is thanking God that he wasn't made a woman, because they hate the women, basically.
Yeah, the Jew lives on hate. It's just hate. It's just so, it is so, like I say, it's a disease. They have to distance themselves from any form of empathy or you know, nice things to do what they do. And the Jew, I am convinced, no matter how doomy and gloomy it might appear at any given point right now, but this is their final, final sort of, going up, and they're going to crash down, and they will be completely scrubbed off the face of this earth. And this would also go in line with any normal biological systems. You know, if you have I never tire of repeating this, because it's like we have to understand this properly, is that any monoculture will eventually reach its demise, because something will come along that it just didn't expect. You know, if you have just this one type of grain in the whole province of Alberta, for example, and then you'll be guaranteed some fungus or some grasshopper, something will come along and decimate the entire crop, and then you won't have anything. That's why it's good to diversify your food staples a little bit, you know, different vegetables, different grains, whatever. And this system we have right now, the Jew lies, the Jew religion of hollow hoax, and all these other religions, which also stem from them to a great part, and the control over the money, which is a placeholder for real value, which they produce nothing of, but they claim entitlement to all real value through the money they have stolen and cheated us out of and murdered us for and so forth. Then they claim entitlement to it. So now, just as an example, what they do with the money that they have stolen. In the UK, for example, now they are giving landlords, people who have property to rent, guaranteed rent for 5 years if you put in some niggers, you know, like that's what they're doing in the UK. Now, if you were some nigger coming in, I mean, of course you're going to go to the UK. Of course you'd be an idiot not to. Hey, 5 years of free rent. You go, why don't you try to go someplace like Lagos or someplace in Nigeria or India or someplace and say, hey, I'm white. I want 5 years of free rent and I want to just ransack your country. Try to do that and see what happens. I mean, the people will just laugh that you even would think of such a thing. So you ask myself, if the allies, the so-called allies, the Anglo-Saxon who were sucked into absolutely slaughtering the Germans, you know, it was just too much in the end. We couldn't resist anymore. If this is the payment they get from their Jewish masters, and they have kicked the Jews out multiple times before, they just have to scratch their head and say, now, how did we deal with this the last time? Oh, we rounded it up and threw them out. But this time, because of the immensity of what they have already done and the absolute insanity of what they still intend to do and what they've already done with injecting everybody with the needles, this bioweapon, I don't know what's going to stop the Anglo-Saxons, when they have figured this, just partially figured it out, to hunt every single Jew down and just kill them or wherever they find them, no matter how, just get rid of them. This is what's coming. Now, I'm not advocating that. I'm not saying do it. I'm just making this prediction, just like if you came and told me you're going to swim across the Atlantic because you're a good swimmer. I'm going to say, don't do it, my friend. You're not going to make it. You're going to die. Oh, you hate me, do you? You hate me. No, I'm telling you the consequences of a bad decision. Okay. Or if you say you're going to go bare naked, climb up Everest to be the first to ever do it. I say, that's a dandy thing to do. You'll be a real hero, but you're not going to make it. You're going to die. Okay. Oh, you hate me, do you? You're an anti-climber. You're an anti blah, 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 blah. I say, no, you make a bad decision. You will live or die by the consequences. Okay. Now we are figuring this out. It's not that hard. And you, before, Monica, you talked about how long it took us to figure this out. Yeah, I agree. Because we were completely indoctrinated with so many lies that had us completely going at each other's throats with all these other lies, because nobody figures out everything at the same pace and the same speed. But now it's so much easier because it is so grotesque. And those 19-year-old girls that you talked about that didn't grasp anything, Monica, I can guarantee you that in 5 years from now, they will probably know a good part of what we know now. I can almost promise you that. I pray
that is true. I pray that is true. And
yes,
I don't like to really just, you know, say, oh, well, this is what's how it's going to unfold. So we don't really know how it's going to unfold. The only thing I can say with certainty is that the parasite never wins.
No.
But I'll just read you a quote here. I think this is really interesting because, you know, this is another Jewish construct, what they fed us, because they don't really want us to think other than this. Okay, so Howard Rosenthal, he lived from 1947 to 1976. So Rosenthal, that's a Jew. And he says, we Jews continue to be amazed at the ease that by which Christians and Americans have fallen into our hands. Woe be and to us if they, the non-Jews, see the futility of it. This is where the crux comes. To lay down the pen and take up the sword. We will never be deposed by words, only force. A Jew said that. Yeah. Now, haven't we always been taught? I'm not telling, just like you said, you're not telling people what to do. I'm not saying. No. It's just that I think it was another Jewish thing that they told us that, you know, the pen is mightier than the sword. Really? Is it?
No. I'll tell you what, Monica, the Jew quotation that you just read there, we should also remind our listeners that the Jews know very well what they are doing and what the result is going to be, because they say in their synagogues and so forth, they say, if the Goyim knew what we teach in our synagogues, they would slaughter us openly in the streets. Okay, if they knew what we teach in the synagogues. Well, now we know not only what they teach, but what they have done and what they are doing and what they still intend to continue to do until we are eradicated. I mean, the Jews have been, since 1945, when they stood atop these huge mountains of dead white people, they says, whoa, that wasn't even that hard. Look at what we've achieved. And now the destiny of the white race is fixed in our hands. And we can rejoice that soon the memory of the white man will be a distant memory, just a distant memory. Now, we're not gone yet. We're not dead yet. No. We are doing everything until our very last breath to get people to finally understand what's going on. And so that's why I say, if they come and take me out tomorrow, great. I'm glad we have this talk right now, Monica. And this message, if it, you know what's going out there, it's going to be recorded. It'll say, oh, they took him out, but here's what he said. Maybe he was right, you know? So this is what's happening now. And that just having these dialogues now, I say, thank God, Monica, we know we're not going into our grave believing in some nonsensical Holocaust, you know,
or not having tried, or not having tried.
Yeah, right? You know, not having tried. We did our best. And that is all that we expect of anybody and everybody. And another thing about why you have to engage the system, it is only through engaging the system that you learn how to do anything. If you want to be a champion swimmer, you've got to start sometime, somewhere, and jump in the water and actually try swimming, even if you don't know how to do a single stroke. You've got to do it. When you're born, you're a baby, and you crawl around, or you're going to bump with your head into a table. Hey, but you're not going to worry about that. You're just going to try it and see what happens. You're engaging your environment. You're engaging reality. That's what we are faced with, this reality of someone, just a small number of people who, through deceit and trickery and treachery, want to actually kill us, which with whatever way works, breeding us down with low IQ invaders. No animal in our entire planet Earth lets other animals come in to displace them. No, they will fight tooth and nail to prevent that from happening. Why don't you just try it? Go to your neighbor who has a good dog and see what happens when you go in there uninvited.
Alfred, that thing about, you know, miscegenation, that's another one that I brought up with these young women and said, you know, birds of a feather flock together. It's very unnatural for different races to mate with each other. I said a bluebird doesn't mate with the gray, gray jay or whatever. I mean, that they immediately, and that many people will say this, is, oh, yeah, but that's different species. We're all one species. We're all the same. And I said, well, I think that we should call ourselves subspecies. Like, you know, the races are subspecies. So, you know, there's this old definition about, oh, if the offspring is viable, in other words, offspring, they're mixed, and then that's the same species. But I don't think that holds. I don't think that necessarily is the correct. I think there are examples in nature where actually different species did mate and then they had offspring. They had viable offspring. So this notion of we're all the same, that is a really big, dangerous one. And then you've got organizations like in our countries, we've got these various organizations that encourage young people to go abroad, go into these third world countries, to go help them help themselves. You know, like in Canada, it's CUSO, Canadian University Services Overseas. And in the United States, I think it's the VSO or the Peace Corps or something. And then in England, it's the other one of those two that I named. And it's young people going off all at the very idealistic time, and also when they're not yet in a marriage, they're not yet settled down in a family, so it's a perfect time for them to go travel and experience the world. And then what happens to many of these people who go and do because they want to help, like that's our nature, we want to help other people, and especially when we've been educated about how, oh, you know, we've done so many bad things, so now they're going to go right it. You know, they're going to make it right again and go to the third world and help them by doing whatever they do with these volunteer organizations for young adults. Okay, that happens to be a time of life when they're really horny, sorry to use that, you know, crude word, but they're single still and they're sexual beings and they're idealistic, and chances are they end up mating with the locals, right? Which happens in many, 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 many. There are many mixed race children that come out of those kind of unions where our people have gone abroad to help out, and then they end up. Okay, so we know one in our family. Anyway, then there's also the missionaries. That's another way that miscegenation has happened on a grand scale. And, you know, missionaries going abroad and then ending up also in romantic unions and also with families, like, you know, maybe the children of missionaries grow up and then they have these romantic unions, whatever it is. So there are many, many ways that this has been pushed. That was sort of the soft push of miscegenation before. And now it's the hard push with just pumping them into our countries, just wide open borders. So we do have a problem on our hands. It's not like, and the more time that goes by, the bigger this problem becomes. And yeah, so they, you know, they're trying to, I'm going to show you something here. This is because I told you that we just had an election. I don't know. Can you see that?
Yes, I can see it. Yes.
So this is a picture on a pamphlet, Guide to the Federal Election. Okay. So this came in everybody's box and I studied that closely, and there's like, oh, I don't know, about 15 people in these little pictures on the front cover here. There's one white man. And here's this, I think this is highly symbolic. This one white guy in this picture here, he has a prosthetic for a leg. So he's got shorts on, so you can see his one leg is normal and the other leg, it's a prosthetic attached to a prosthetic foot, and he's putting his ballot into the ballot box. Oh, and then there is a white woman just off in the corner here working at the desk there and at the ballot. But all the others are dark. They're either East Asian or African or whatever, and or Muslim, you know, all veiled up and stuff. All and this is Canadian federal election. Okay, so that's the messaging we get with that. Now, I was thinking about that guy with the prosthetic. He's the only white guy in here. I'm thinking, wow, that's interesting. So the white guy who has probably gone off to war and then got his leg shot off, or he's actually doing the actual work. Maybe he lost his leg in a farming accident, so he's the worker. So the white men are doing everything. We're fighting wars. Of course, there are always proxy wars for the Jews. And or he's got the prosthetic because of, like I say, industrial accident or a farming accident, whatever it is. I think that's really symbolic. I think it's amazing.
And they're trying to make us thinking that that's normal. It's not normal.
Well, of course.
And that's why I notice myself when I'm in a store or something and I see like mulatta, you know, like half Negroes or something on a package of something they're trying to sell. I never buy anything with a nigger on it. I just don't.
Yeah.
I say, no.
That's a very strategy.
If I'm in Africa, I might, you know, I'm buy bananas from some Negroes, but here in our countries, I will avoid anything that has anything but white people on it. And they better be good looking white people. I mean, this is so obscene. And I notice I get an allergic reaction. That's, you know, having figured out what's going on here and know, you know, that's when once we all get that, and we all will, Monica, we didn't used to feel this way, but we do now because we've learned it. Everybody will be learning this. It's going like a wildfire, this awareness. And then we will do what we have always done. If we were not capable of doing what now needs to be done, we wouldn't be here today. I do not believe for one moment. And you know, I'll tell you what, my time in prison, that wasn't bad at all. I was at a pretty good time. And I learned a lot in that prison. And I also learned that all these other races, I was, by the way, the smallest minority of anybody in that prison. I was a German, a real German. There was the smallest minority, maybe 10% of the people are German. The rest are all, you know, something else. And they were all together as brother, you know, hey, Buddha, wo gibt's dies, you know, hey, brother, where you get this, where you get that, brother. But that's because they want to know where they get the freebies and their other invader friends, you know, they can tell each other where they get everything for free kind of thing. But when it's up to them to get their, like, live off what they work for themselves, they hate each other more than you can possibly imagine. And that's why these invaders who are now in our country, we can expect there be like a sort of like a civil war between the different invader groups. They're going to be killing each other off, you know, fighting over the goods they want to steal from us kind of thing. And in the end, when we do figure this out, we have the advantage of defending our home turf. You know, and then we will do whatever it takes. And then you're going to see a lot of those people who think they are some maybe semi-equal to us. They will be coming and offering their services to us, for us to deal with the lowest of the invaders and get rid of them first. So you start with, you know, last in, first out, and the lowest forms, get them out first. And then until you have a situation that where you can survive, like it'd be nice to have the pure white countries that we once did. But we won't be around that long. And the people who will be making that decision, where does the fighting stop? It'll be after us, because this is going to be once this really kicks into gear, this race war, this global race war, it's not going to stop until everyone's so exhausted and everything will be so broken that we have a population overshoot right now, which means that we have been able to reach the population levels that we now see in all our countries because we had a functioning infrastructure largely set up by the very people who are now in the crosshairs to be exterminated. That's us white folks, by the way. And now we have the muds, you know, the shit skins and whatnot, directed by the Jews to take us out, so the Jew thinks there will never be a challenger to his rule of power ever again. I mean, that is a total feudal system, if you will. You know, that the king can rule with a pure iron fist kind of thing, and the lowlifes will do everything he wants. But a king can only remain king if there's a stability, like over time, if he has to keep the operation running. But this, what we're seeing now, is taking us straight into a global collapse with a massive population overshoot, so that the people, that the breaking down of the infrastructure will be able to only sustain a tiny fraction of the population that we now find on this planet. All the major cities will be just total death zones. Whether you like it or not, whether you think it's good or bad, doesn't matter. That's just the natural law. That's what we're facing now. So that's, And I'll repeat again that our intention is to resolve this in a civilized fashion as is possible under the circumstances. But a continuation and looking away and not naming the problem is not on the table. We name the problem, we identify the problem, we've diagnosed the situation, we know what needs to be done, and that's what we're striving to do.
Actually, Alfred, you just reminded me of something that you wrote to me in a letter, the first letter that you wrote after our trial was done. It was in October of 2018. And you wrote this paragraph by memory here. You said, "While we tried to have a civilized dialogue with them, but they have shown us that they are not interested in a civilized dialogue. But yeah, we are trying our best to resolve this in a civilized manner. So, you know, if they go after us because we're somehow haters, well, we are trying to resolve this with education and enlightenment and with words. They are the ones who are using force by locking us up and doing these kind of things." The other thing I want to say is that when we talk about the other races, that we don't appreciate them being here and we want them to get out, and last in, first out is what I always say too. Yes. It does not mean that we hate them. We just want to have a place for ourselves to live. And it just seems like that's another good question to ask your friends if they're just starting to come awake or not yet awake, and say, why can the European peoples, or the white race, the Caucasian race, the Aryan people, however you want to describe us, why can we not have our own place to live anywhere on this earth? That will stump them, because the other races can have their own place. Like a country, you name any one of these countries elsewhere in the world of other races, and there will be 90-95% of their own race. There is a few other people living there, I'm sure, but there's not a flood being pushed in. I understand, I've been told that Japan is being attacked now in the same way. I always thought that they were pretty homogeneous there, but that's changing, I understand. Somebody told me, and of course, Japan is in the crosshairs too, because look, Japan was with Germany in World War II, and Japan is another race of people that, my goodness, they are a strong people who, you know, I mean, I have great admiration for the Japanese people. And apparently they're under attack now too, which makes me very sad. But I want to show you another one. And then also I read a comment from in the chat room there. And I don't have it open at the same time. And I think it was from a moniker called Shameless Wise Ass or something like that. Sorry if I got it wrong. But it said that in Canada, it's law that there has to be mixed race couples in advertising. Now, I don't know. Can that be? I don't know. But anyway, it's just ubiquitous. I remember somebody commenting the other day, was it you, Alfred, when you saw an ad? Somebody was commenting that they saw an ad where it was an all white family, and they were so surprised because that's so unusual, right? But anyway, if you want to get a job with Northern Health. So this is another card that came in the mailbox. Everybody gets it, I guess. Interested in a career with Northern Health? Question mark. Learn and train in your local area for a rewarding job that offers future career growth, competitive salaries, and excellent benefits. Make a difference in your community. Now, everybody got this, and look at the people. There's not a single white one there. We've got brown, black, Muslim, maybe East, Chinese, I think. So there you go. There's no more whites in the picture in terms of career opportunities or, you know, even voting in the election. You have this depiction of just all mixed up, and isn't that nice? Kumbaya. You know, so you know, I just think that's kind of interesting.
There's a story. I want to go through this story that just happened to be very recently, last Wednesday, actually, a week ago, on the way to Munich. And it's these things seem to happen to me. It's amazing because it says, oh, this is magic. It's just, anyway, it's a bit of a long story. So I'm going to start with when I came out of my 4 years of prison and they still had a mask mandate on the trains here in Germany. And I never used to wear a mask. I just always put it below my chin or someplace. And then, but if a conductor would come down the train, I'd sort of put it up. Briefly, just for when they check the tickets, so I don't get thrown off the train, kind of thing. I don't want an unnecessary hassle. And as soon as the conductor's gone, I put it down. And I saw this young guy who was sitting across from me, and he was he also had his mask somewhere below his chin, someplace, and he was did the sort of the same thing, and he was smiling at me. So obviously, I started the dialogue with him after the conductor was gone, and he got off at the same place, you know, here where I live in Germany. He lives here also. So we had a chat, you know, coming off the train, and I saw he was fairly wide awake about so many things. And I asked him, why don't you come by and we have a fire in the yard and, you know, we can grill some stuff and just, you know, chew the fat kind of thing. So we became friends, you know. And then just last Wednesday, I happened to see him at the train station. Also, he happened to be wanting to go to Munich at the same time on the same train, just pure coincidence. So we get on the train. It's fairly full, and we finally find a place to sit. It's fairly full. It's at the end of the wagon. And we started reminiscing about these crazy, insane times with the masks and so forth. And I was telling him, and I says, well, you know, and I was talking in German, of course. And I said, you know, the eternal poisoners of the wells have really done a proper job this time, injecting everybody. You know, people are dying like flies with this Jew shot. And then just like a pistol shot, this face from the seat that was just, you know, there, like that guy turned around because we were sitting behind this guy. I am a Jew, he says, I'm a Jew. And he says, oh, so you're a Jew. So, oh, you Jews probably didn't get the real thing. You got a placebo because this is a Jew shot, you know, meant to kill, not to kill people. And he was just going completely ballistic. And then in his tirades, he was just going crazy. He was saying something. He was there with his wife also. And then he said something about, well, since 45, you know, Germany is a good place to live. Imagine that, a Jew saying, okay, since 45, the country has been liberated. Yeah. And it's been good to live. Yeah. We see what they've done out of Germany. They wanted to actually exterminate the Germans with the allies, you know, the Morgenthau Plan and so forth. And he looks at it from the way he looks at the world view. It's a good place to live, just like the United States is becoming a better place to live as it gets flooded by hordes of barbarians, because the Jew could always slither back into chaos and hide better in the chaos. But if the white people in the United States wake up fast enough, they will know what to do, and USA will become Jew free. That's, I can promise you that. I mean, if they flood North America, in fact, all the white countries with all these invaders from the third world, that is their best hope to escape themselves from getting what was certainly coming down on them. Like Dr. Wickstrom says, they're all gonna die, and he says, and that's marvelous because then we'll be rid of this problem. So the Jew in their panic. Oh yeah, and then I was trying to this guy's wife, you know, who said I'm a Jew. Then she turned around towards me and says, "You stop talking to us. Stop talking." But she's you know they're like trying to silence me and but you can see it revealed to me just like I think it was Goebbels. He says when you reveal the Jew as being a Jew, they will shrink back and they'll just go, "Oh, I've been found out. And these people, I mean, they really exposed what they are. This guy exposed just how vile these Jews are. I didn't know they can be that vile until this guy demonstrated it to me with his way of behaving here.
It's a great story, Alfred.
I'm trying to think of the details because it just happened, but it was so intense. And then he, you know, just after I says the Jew shot stuff and so forth, and he was going crazy. And he says, "I'm gonna take a picture of you and go to the police." So then, his little mobile phone went through the, you know, through the seat, and I was looking at this mobile phone. And so I put on my nice smile and I start saying, "Oh yeah, grüß Gott," by someone, you know, in German. I says, "Well, how are we all doing today? I hope we're having a fine day today, you know." And then he realized I'm not ranting and raving about these vile Jews anymore. So he stopped filming. And then I asked him, "Do you, and I happened to have my 9/11 explosive evidence t-shirt on because I was going to see some conspiracy theorists in Munich, you know, that kind of thing. So I was always like to wear this thing." And I says, So I stand up and I showed him my back and says 9/11 explosive evidence kind of thing. And so he reads this in English, and then he reads it. And then he goes and says, "Oh, that's your opinion, blah blah, you know, deine Weltanschauung, you know, like your opinion." Yeah, right. The hard evidence of what happened on 9/11 is opinion. It's all opinion. The fact that the Jew shot kills people is opinion. It's not important. It's just an opinion. You know, the Jews reduce everything to opinion this, opinion that, blah 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 blah. Everything.
Alfred. Yeah, yeah. They live in the dark. They are a dark entity. They are a vampire. They are a parasite. And therefore, when you shine the light on them, they shrivel up and scurry in between the cracks, and they don't like it. They become very fearful. And when you have them one-on-one like that, that's the best. I remember I had the incident in New York City. This was in 2019. I was near the One World Trade Center tower, the new place, and there was obviously a museum there for showing the tourists, you know, all about 9/11, their version of it, of course. And the lineup was huge, but I was on a boulevard a little bit distance away, and it was quite an empty boulevard, like, you know, lots of space. But I saw this very, very, very Jewish couple from behind. I was walking in the same direction as they were, but I could see that they were very Jewish, as him with this funny hat, and I think, God, you know, very traditional looking Orthodox Jews. And I thought, I just got to do this. So I scurried to catch up to them, and then I circled around in front of them. And so I was just in front of them, and they kind of had to stop walking because there I was standing there, and I just had a big smile on my face, and I just said, the goyim no. And oh my goodness, they just the way they reacted, it was pure fear. And
oh, yes.
he takes his arm around his wife tighter and move, you know, sort of guides her away from me, and it's like, you know, the roar.
Yeah, yeah.
The jowls were shaking. They didn't say anything to me. They just wanted to get away from me. But there was like intense fear, and maybe what else was mixed in with it? Like, yeah, just shock and fear that here I was, this white woman, just saying quite jovially to them, the goyim no.
and Monica, can you imagine what's going to happen on this planet Earth, the sacred planet of Earth, when everywhere people will be talking about it, and so much more? When I mean the rage will be, you, it'll be a force of nature. you know, just a small part of the rage that's developing will be a force of nature. They will be swept away. Like Dr. William Luther Pierce always says, the broom of fire are going to sweep through our halls of power and sweep the treason out, which should have happened a long time ago. And it will happen because this is an intolerable situation. And you notice yourself how once you have reached a certain or decontaminated yourself from all this, these indoctrinated, these lies and so forth, it's your instincts guide you, and your instincts always, you know, like you don't fear them anymore. Like this incident where they're trying to shut me up. I just, on the train there, I was just smiling at them, knowing that they're not going to sleep for probably the whole week. I slept really fine that night, and I'm sleeping not fine now, even though they're threatening that they're going to arrest me and take me to their thing there. I say, what are you guys going to do? You can't stop the truth. It's just exploding. You know, whatever happens to me now, it is nothing compared to, for example, our cousin Monica, who died 2 days after the second Jew shot. I mean, I want someone to be held to account for just her death. I mean, she was our age, I believe it was, you know, and she 2 days after her second shot, she's dead because she wanted to thought, well, if I get vaccinated, I can go to France and visit my grandchild or something like that. Well, she never got to see her grandchild because she was dead because she got a Jew shot. Fucking Jews, you know, kikes. I mean, bioweapon. I mean, geez, you know. That's not an opinion. That's the way it was.
Yeah. On, so you know? Anyway, okay. Well, you know, I'm thinking I wanted to follow up on after our last talk. This is just sort of changing direction here a little bit, yes. Alfred. After our last show, episode 2, we had talked a lot about the reverse engineering of the Canadian, you know, the unmarked grave story and how the,
yes.
They've already introduced legislation to criminalize that. And it was just very, very similar to the Holocaust and the legislation there and all the way they treat it, right? Like you got to respect or don't insult the memory of the dead and or guide them home spiritually instead of digging up the ground that they tell us that there was this crime committed and all that stuff. You know, so there's no evidence, all that stuff. Anyway, there was a commenter, and I checked this out. He did a book review of a book called Indigenous Continent. And he did quite an analysis of the language that was used in that. And he had bought that book and read it because he had listened to some show by some, you know, truth seekers, truth tellers that they recommended that book. And he was really wondering why they had recommended it because it was very anti-white. But then he realized, no, the reason they had recommended it is because even though the language is all skewed anti-white, and pro-Indigenous, pro-Indian, there were all kinds of morsels in that book telling about the actual brutal events of the Indians, what they did either to each other when they were warring against each other or to the white settlers. And it's absolutely brutal. Now, if you were listening to mainstream, you know, CBC in Canada, the Communist Broadcast Corporation, it's called Canadian Broadcast Corporation. If you were listening to that, which has so much time dedicated to the noble Indians and their wonderful culture and their music and their philosophy and how wonderfully well they treat nature and all that stuff, you would never, ever, ever have an inkling of the brutality with which they actually lived and treated each other or treated their prisoners that they took. And the slower and harder and longer the torture, the better for them because they somehow sucked energy from it. I mean, there's a lot of horror stories, plus cannibalism. They never talk about that in, you know, they don't teach us about that in grade school either, that there was a lot of cannibalism. That was just par for the course. It was normal for them. And so we don't hear those things. We only hear about how the evil white man took over the continent and da 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 da. But he gave this commentary, he just gave some great examples in a very long book review, and I just wrote down a few words out of it of how that even that book that did tell about some of the brutality with which Indians were treating each other or treating the white settlers, still the language was so skewed. And we witness that all the time from the mainstream media or the legacy media when they talk about, you know, one side, it's an act of aggression, and the other side it's terrorism, or the other side it's, you know, a legitimate war, and the other side is self-defense. No, terrorism or self-defense, you know, these kind of comparisons. So that how they describe things will shape the image in the reader's mind. So if it was something that the Indians did, perpetrated, it was strategic or emotional or a spiritual response to catastrophic losses, or and even describing the torture and the cannibalism, they would say they absorbed spiritual power. Now, doesn't that make it sound so innocent? They're describing torture scenes and cannibalism, but what the purpose of it, so that the Indians could absorb the spiritual power. Now, that sounds really kind of, you know, benign or nice or noble or whatever. Like, oh, you could admire that. They're going to get some spiritual power. But white people, anything that was described about the white people, it was, oh, it was just ingrained hatred of the Indians, or it was genocidal, or it was, you know, the only reason for the killing was their just hatred. Like, there was no reason for their, you know, wanting to maybe defend their communities that were being attacked, you know, and women and children being killed or tortured, or, you know, all these things. No, it was just so one-sided language. So this is just one example of how the psychological warfare is being conducted against us, that it is ubiquitous. So it's not just, you know, the news that we hear and how they portray the news. It's, and not just that they omit some news and give us other news, or that they lie to us, but it's the language they use to describe us, or to describe our opponent, or describe how we are behaving or what we are doing. It's just ubiquitous. But once you see it, you cannot unsee it. And this is why we talk about these things, is to educate people about it, to open their eyes about it. And once you do start to notice it, well, then the noticing just becomes exponential. You will notice it everywhere, and you will see it. You can't unsee what you have noticed already. So that's one thing I wanted to bring up, just because it came as a direct result after our last show. And you know what you're saying about the all these people that are invaders and whatnot, and then when this really gets hot here, a lot of people will die on all sides. And here's another way of looking at the population of, you know, why are there so few whites anymore in proportion to all the rest of the population? It's not just that we're not having enough babies. It's also that the others are having a lot of babies. Now, in times past, before we started interfering and doing all our good works of charity and fixing up sanitation systems in third world countries and doing those, and, you know, doing things like that, good works, the high birth rates would have been offset by high death rates, high mortality rates, I should say. Just that was the way it was. Like the Negro race, the Negroid race, they have a much higher fecundity, you could say. And in times past, that was like a survival strategy. If you were to look at the animal world, you know, there's some species that they have many, 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 many offspring, is because only a few survive, right? And there's something about an R to K ratio, and I forgot which one's which, but one is the birth rate, you know, the fecundity, the number of offspring that you have, and the other is the survival rate. And the it would have been all balanced out because many died. Now we go over there, the white people go over there and help them out with, you know, fixing up sanitation and whatnot, and getting them into being able to grow food and whatnot. So you could say that a lot of these people who hate us with a vengeance, because the Jews have incited the hatred of all of these other races towards the white race. Like, they have incited the hatred towards the white race. They have told them all about how evil we are, and they have really incited that. They've just riled them up to hate the white race. But you could say that maybe 9 out of 10 of them even owe their very lives to us. They could
Yes, Monica, that's a good point. I'm glad you made that point. That's so important. These are all all of this stuff is part of the diagnosis of what is happening to us. and will be part of the formula to get it fixed. Okay, because if you, just to make it a simple, if you, for example, go into a hotel that forgot to lock their doors, and then you have a good party in there and feed yourself at the buffet and so forth, and then you stay there for a while, and then you have some babies in there, and then the owner comes back and he says, "Hey, you're not supposed to be here." And you say, "What do you mean?" And your kids will say, "Oh, they were born there, and you were welcomed in, and blah 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 blah." No, at the end of the day, that owner, the true rightful owner, will toss you out. And if you put up resistance, then he will adjust his methods to deal with your resistance. And going back to our story here, in our generation, Monica, the big topic, it wasn't climate change, it was population explosion. And it all made sense back when we were young to understand we cannot continue to have big families like our forefathers did, because we know that, lemmings, if they just multiply forever and ever, what happens? And we wanted to, we did it for environmental, our environmental judgment. Yeah, we want to have a healthy life. We don't want to have overpopulation. We enjoy nature and so forth. And the bait and switch is just phenomenal. Now the narrative is, oh, who's going to pay the pensions? Who's going to this? And they want to up Canada's population to 100 million, knowing that the whites are hardly having babies. And then the white people will be such a tiny minority. And then the Jews will get away with everything they've done. So their calculation, that's how they've calculated it. This bait and switch. And like you said, they incite all those coming in to hate Whitey. And, well, is Whitey going to stay asleep? I don't think so. Those German girls you just talked to, they might come from I don't know what kind of a town or city they're living in. If they're not noticing what's happening even in Germany, they haven't noticed yet, but they will notice very soon, Monica. People are waking up everywhere. Look in Ireland, look in the other European countries here. People are waking up. And when the Germans do finally wake up, they always said, "Der letzte Bataillon wird ein Deutscher sein." That means the last soldier standing will be the Germans. You mustn't forget that the Germans have been more guilt-tripped than anybody else because, the Holocaust, but that doesn't mean we're going to stay in that condition. And all those people who haven't yet awoken, when they do wake up, they've got so much to catch up on, and they will be just exploding with energy to catch up, to prove that they aren't the last idiot, the village idiot, so to speak, the last one on the block to figure it out. I mean, what's keeping a lot of people repeating this silly mantras of, oh, we're all the same, blah, 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 it's because they were taught not to fall out of line, and that is the party line, okay? And when they realize the wind has changed and all the people that count for anything at all are singing something completely different than what they had been chanting so far, they're going to be doing anything and everything to get in, find their reintegration into the new direction, into the swarm. And that swarm will be hunting down and chasing down the invaders and the Jews. It's always been that way.
Well, important to always bring it back to who's doing that.
Who's doing it?
And there was a good comment there in the chat room that I just checked, and obviously answer to when I was talking about these, the Indians, the Indians,
Indians
North American Indians. And you say, well, they don't own and control the media. No, it's the Jews. You're absolutely right. They are being instrumentalized by the Jews. When the Indians are being propped up right now, like you wouldn't believe. Okay, so like I mentioned, they how they're being portrayed in the mainstream radio, CBC, the state-sponsored radio. It's just like they're the most noble, angelic, fantastic people, that they have never done wrong. They have always treated nature with the utmost care and concern and all these things, right? You just wouldn't dream of that they had a brutal and violent past, that they did torture and cannibalism to get their spiritual energy or whatever. But they are being instrumentalized. Now, if anybody thinks that if we actually, you know, if the Chinese or the East Indians, you know, the dot Indians, we distinguish the Indians here in Canada, it's feathers or the dots. So if the dot Indians, if they, do you think, do the feather Indians actually think that these Chinese or dot Indians are going to treat them any better? Or think of it this way. Do they think that if it wasn't the Europeans who came over here in the late 1400s and early 1500s, second wave, by the way, we were here first. If people, the German girls, they also say, hey, well, you know what? You weren't here first. Ah, well, guess what? We were.
We were.
Solutrians. That's a whole nother story. That's thousands of years before the Asiatics came over from, you know, from Asia, the Europeans came over to North America. That's been proven with many, many ways, with the technology, all kinds of ways. But anyway, so do they think that they would have been treated better by if the Chinese had come here first, like before we came here in the 1400s, 1500s? I hardly think so. Probably not a single one of them would have been left alive. Yeah. And yet we are so like we're just bending over backwards trying to, you know, uplift them and help them and take, you know, just help them every step of the way. Now, do we really think that we're the first generation of people who are caring and compassionate? This is the thing I also wonder. Did people really think that our ancestors were all really evil, but somehow we turned out to be so caring and compassionate? We're the only ones that we came into the picture and suddenly we want to fix all these evil things that our parents and grandparents did? Are you kidding me? No, we come from the same genetic stock. They were caring and compassionate too. Times were different, conditions were different, and they weren't so under a spell, the Jewish spell. So yeah, things were different, and white people came over and settled the land. And it's like, yeah, there were some conflicts, but hey, the picture we're getting in the media is so one-sided, it's unbelievable. Now, the other thing I wanted to say, you mentioned about the 100 million in Canada by the turn of the century. Yeah, the Century Initiative. Well, guess who's really behind that, pushing it? Our new Prime Minister.
Carney. Yeah, yeah, there you go. Jew.
Mark Carney, the ghost of Maurice Strong. And who's Maurice Strong? He was the godfather of the climate change narrative all about controlling us. Actually, when they say reduce your carbon footprint, folks, I hate to say it, I hate to break it to you, but that is about literally reducing your literal footprint, meaning extinguishing life. And yeah. I mean, we have carbon-based life on planet Earth. That's just how it is. We're not silicon-based or whatever else based. We are carbon-based life on this planet.
You know, I heard somebody put it this way the other day in some talk show. It was good. They don't go after felonies. They go after feelings, and they engineer the feelings. So we white people are hated, and we just have to existing is already a crime for us. Just existing, and all the invaders can do anything and everything they want, and it's okay because they have hurt feelings. You know, they always have hurt feelings, and we're the ones to blame. You know, you're looking at something, Monica. Put on your mic.
I was. I see. It's a bit onerous here. Next time, I have to set up a whole separate computer so that I can read the chat while I can have this on still. Because I always mute and then I bring up my other.
Right.
And then because Lisa from Germany, and I do believe we know her as she wrote you a letter, the one that you sent back to the false address. But anyway, I think that she used to go as Freya. Yeah. I'm pretty sure we're talking about the same person. She has written me a longer message there. So I have to read that and then I'll read it to you. So that's what I'm doing here, Alfred.
Okay, very good.
But I have to pull that up.
Yeah, we need a proper studio, Monica, where we got multiple monitors but then the thought police will come and steal it all like they always like to do. Okay, put on your, I can't hear you, Monica. Microphone.
No,
microphone.
I'm back. I had to unmute. See, okay. So yeah, she basically was saying that she used to teach immigrants and stuff, and you know, and some were nice, some were not so nice, but this was earlier times, I guess, that she used to tutor people who were like new Germans, immigrants, whatever.
Yeah.
And that we really have to take it easy on these young people. They really just don't know. They've been indoctrinated. Now, again, I read it really quickly and to come back because you were waiting for me to come back here. But yeah, I agree. We need to be mindful of that. I mean, we were so indoctrinated ourselves, and these people, they just came out of high school. They are so still indoctrinated. We have to just help them along rather than attacking people if they're not there yet where we are. I mean, it took us a long time to figure this out. People are figuring it out faster now. We notice that. I mean, there are a lot of young people who are figuring it out, and boy, do they get it. They connect the dots really fast, and it's wonderful, wonderful.
I love it. Monica, yeah. When young people have a clear understanding and they're not afraid of anything anymore, because, I mean, you lose your fear. With understanding comes the loss of fear. Once you understand reality, you're not afraid of anything anymore. Just the lie. You're not afraid of the lie. You hate the lie and you fight the lie, but your fear is overcome then. Go ahead.
For these young people who are getting it, when they do get it, and they've also already experienced the hardships of being a white guy right now,
yeah.
Like especially white men, they get to the back of the bus all the time, right? And they're already bumping up against that hatred against whites. And so they've already noticed that. And so then something happens, they really wake up. When they really wake up, they realize that they actually have nothing to lose, and they put all their energy into fighting this. Like,
very good. That's music in my ears, Monica. They realize they have nothing left to lose. And that's the situation we are in. We have nothing left to lose. Once they grasp that, their fear is gone. They are back to their natural condition, their natural state, which is their instincts, which is the highest intelligence are your instincts. And that's it. Then they're in the game after that. Then they're useful. And that's what we have to achieve for all of our people. I predict my forecast or prediction is there's going to be like a domino effect. It might be Ireland or someplace where they're just going to, like a broom of fire to sweep the traitors out of the parliament. And then people will start to take things into their own hands, because, you think of a country like Ireland that is so innocent of any evil doings, that they always blame the Nazis on or this or that on. They're minding their own business, and they are being flooded by the subhumans of all the third world. I mean, putting them up in, and getting 5 years rent paid for, landlords who want to make lots of money to get your town filled with the Negroes and stuff. I mean, also these people coming in, the invaders coming in. Do you think that some Negro from Lagos or someplace who's just had his rent paid for and gets everything for free, he's going to start working? And even if he wanted to work, we don't want him here. But they don't even want to work. They want a free lunch forever. I mean, it's this. I tell you, if the white race, I keep repeating myself, but if the white race truly is that stupid, that docile, not to be able to figure this out, so be it. Go extinct. Nobody's going to care. But they're not that stupid. They were just sleeping very tightly.
Yeah, that's it. And now we don't want to be hating on our people. But Alfred, I actually have just kept my microphone on. This makes it a lot less complicated. So
yes, of course.
On the other tab. So here's a good meme from Thomas Dwyer. Thank you. The leading cause of anti-Semitism is, guess
Jews,
what it is?
Jews.
Jewish behavior.
Jewish behavior, of course.
And then I'm going to read that from Lisa from Germany.
Please do.
Because I got it a little bit wrong. She says, Monica, there was a time when I taught German classes to so-called refugees and Spätaussiedler with German ancestry from Russia, a mixed bag of people, really nice ones and difficult criminal ones. And at that time, I was ignorant of the problem people of all races the problem that people of all races brought in by Jewish NGOs pose for us, Germans, as a people. We really cannot blame such young people in their 20s for being totally unaware of what is really going on. Yeah, that's basically what I did tell you. And then her next message, love you, Alfred. You are the greatest.
Danke, Lisa. Can I just interject, Monica? I'm going to say in German, then I'll translate it. Viele der Aussiedler sind eigentlich Juden. Genauso wie in die ganzen Verbrecher, wie sie immer in den USA sagten, das waren Russen, das waren immer die Juden aus Russland. Now in English. Many of those expatriates coming from the East claiming to be Germans were actually Jews, because they all came out, they left the Soviet Union when the things were getting a bit more meager there. They couldn't have such a nice living as they could here in the West. So they'd always come out, but those are primarily Jews posing as Germans. Just like in the United States, they're always talking about, oh, the Russian criminals, those were all the Jews coming from the Soviet Union. And they're
you're
Jews,
absolutely
they're criminals,
right.
You know? And so
you're absolutely right. Yeah. Mariana Wilfert, she talked a lot about that. And I don't know where she is now, if she's in jail.
She's in
or
prison.
Not.
Yeah, she's in prison right now, unfortunately.
So anyway, Lisa amended her message there. Love you, Alfred. You are the greatest. And then in brackets, but listen to your wife. She has good advice. And you probably know what she's talking about. And then Leslie Borey. Hello, Leslie Borey. And he says, exactly, what are they going to do? Kill us twice? Oh, that's for those. I think that was in response to the comment about these young people when they're waking up, they have nothing left to lose and they're just going to go. I think that's what he means by that. But yeah, so anyway, I'm going to get back.
The advice for my wife is always to take more Valium, to keep my, don't get too excited, you know, keep, you know, so that's, you know, yeah, it's
well, you know, I guess we want to educate people what's going on. We want to give them, we don't want to, here's the other thing, Alfred. I want our broadcast to be shareable with people who have maybe just started to wake up.
Yeah.
So that the people who are listening to us here, mostly they're pretty hardcore, dedicated people. But I want them to be able to share this with, you know, their cousin or their friend that is, they're just trying to start to bring on board with all these things, so that we can kind of explain things how they are. And not have too much in the video that would just sort of send them running for the hills. And I don't mean that we sugarcoat the information that we provide. No, I think it's when we're talking about how it's going to play out, because I don't know how it's going to play out. But
yeah.
Again, I mean, this comes from a Jew, this whole thing about to lay down the pen and take up the sword. We will never be deposed by words, only force. I mean, this whole thing about the pen is stronger, mightier than the sword, that was always drummed into us. And I don't know.
I'll say the higher the pain level gets, the more harsh the harsher the reality will be that the Jews will find themselves dealing with. And they always scurry off and hide their disguises. That's why they're always anonymous. You know, that's why in the past, just a couple of things I want to run by with this whole thing with Israel and the Jewish problem. Many Jews, before the creation of the State of Israel, were actually against the state of the creation of Israel because they know themselves. They knew themselves. And Adolf Hitler, I think it was in 1920 or 1924, long before he came to power, he started beginning to understand what's going on there. And he said that and that was before the State of Israel was created. He predicted that if that state comes into being, it will be a safe haven. And there will be no extradition from that country, and it'll be a safe haven for the Jews in their global crime syndicate, their crime network. That's exactly what it is. How could this man, Adolf Hitler, have seen this so clearly? And now we are experiencing that which he warned us about, that which Henry Ford warned us about. Show me one American who would not admit that Henry Ford is a true American hero. He was industrious. He was ingenious. He had the betterment of his population in mind. He was a real hero. And he put his resources to good use and analyzed the problem, spent a fortune back then, like it'd be lots of millions of dollars in today's money, what he put into use to get the best people to figure out this and diagnose it, analyze it. And he had figured everything out, gave us the warning. And why did we not listen? We wouldn't have the problem now if we had listened to him. And also, Israel, it has no extradition treaty with no country in this world because the uniqueness of their suffering in their halakha. So this fraud that netted them countless trillions of shekels, this lie, the complete opposite of the truth, they impose, they are responsible for all the death and destruction of the world wars and so many other wars. The Jews have always gotten off the best from anybody because they always hide before the fighting starts. That's their mode of operation. And then they claim, Holocaust. And then they use that as the excuse not to extradite anybody. So this is a crime construct that if it didn't exist and someone wrote that down as a play or a movie, people would say, no, that's too insane. Nobody's going to believe it. And
that's
yet
right.
Our reality is beyond what any normal person could even begin to believe. And if anybody thinks we're not going to be able to deal with it, think again. We are. And we're on the best way right now. We're just waking people up. That's all we're doing, waking people up. Okay,
Monica. Truth is stranger than fiction, isn't it? Like you,
Like
alluding to what you just said, that you wouldn't – I could never have – believe that this is for real if you had shown us a movie of what's going on now 15 years ago, even just with all the tranny stuff. I could not have believed it. I said, you're absolutely insane. But anyway, I'll read the next comment from Lisa from Germany. She says, yes, Alfred, I noticed that fact. They talked, she's referring to, she left this comment where you're talking about all these expats.
Yeah,
the Jews who were in the East and they came back pretending to be German. And oh my goodness, there were many of them. So when people say, what happened to all the Jews if they didn't get gassed in the chambers? Well, they pretended to be Germans. They changed their names. They made sure that they, if they didn't already know the language, like if they were maybe from another area where it wasn't German, they would learn German so well that they could be exchanged for a German. They'd change their name, have a new identity and come back as Germans.
Oh, yes.
And they took over. But anyway, she says here, I noticed that fact. They talked openly about going to the synagogue, but they also said claiming to be Jews without actually knowing anything about the Jewish belief gave them privileges, made the transfer a lot easier.
I'll give you privileges. Yeah, Jews don't pay taxes in Germany because of the Holocaust. You see, you cannot get any more parasitical than what they do. And then as repayment, well, I'm not going to say what they did to the Germans. I'm going to say, look how they repaid the Anglo-Saxons. Look at Ireland. Look at England. Oh, boy, they repaid him just marvelously, handsomely for their assistance in bombing Germany back to the Stone Age. I mean, wow, that's a real good friend, these Jews.
Here's another comment. First from Shameless Wise Ass, that's why he stopped the Havara Agreement. I'm not sure who stopped the Havara Agreement. Was that Adolf Hitler stopped it anyway?
I know about it, but I don't know the details, so I don't want to comment.
Then the next comment by Bill 88. Thank you for your comments, everybody. I heard that the Kike hid in Pennsylvania during the USA Civil War, which they assuredly had every hand in instigating. Exactly.
They instigate and they back off. They hide.
And
hide.
Then hide.
As soon as they finished inciting enough that the fighting gets going, they slither back and watch from behind, and then they'll come as the good Samaritan afterwards and say,
So Alfred, I've closed that tab now, but I want to say thanks to everybody who tuned in live. And should we wrap it up pretty soon here?
We'll wrap it up. We're coming to the top of the hour, and in the future we're going to try to learn how to the studio, how this thing works a little better, so we can put in some video snips and so forth. But it was good that we got it off the ground at all anyway, because there was some problems at the beginning with the
Well, you did well, Alfred. I know you were working up a good sweat there trying to get us on in the first place. And I'm glad you're the tech guy doing that part of it. But now I know that when I go to the other tab, I just won't mute so that I can just read things.
Yeah.
And I'm checking my list, and I think I've covered all the points that I had written down for our talk today. And, you know, we'll be waiting with great bated breath and, you know, attention to what happens next in your backyard there in Germany, Alfred.
They could storm this house any time and drag me out in handcuffs and blah, throwing the slammer. I go, if that's life, that's okay. But I'm not going into a coffin from a Jew shot. I mean, you know, like our cousin.
Well,
that's,
you know what? We can rest easy at night to say we're doing what we have to do.
Yeah. I mean,
we feel that we're doing the best we can.
Absolutely. And also knowing for 100% certainty, Monica, that all those people who didn't want to hear about what's going on, they will feel what's going on real soon. This is coming. It's going to hit everybody. You know, the ship is sinking that you're on. No, it's not. It's unsinkable. Well, if you can't swim, then you'll find out soon enough that it actually is sinking, sort of thing. That's
So anyway. I want to say thanks to all the listeners and thanks to the technical help we had at the very beginning, Josh. I forgot to say that at the very start of the show I was going to, because he helped you get it all sorted out there.
Yes. Much appreciation. Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in. And that's my last word. We'll see you on the next time. And all the best. Yeah. Maybe you want to say goodbye too.
Yeah. Thank you very much. All the listeners, everyone's waking up and so forth. And the support crew, Josh and Dave Gaheri and a few other people, like everybody, the whole team actually. And we're going to do our homework and try to figure this out so we don't need your help so strongly anymore. But thanks. But we have a lot to still learn. So we'll still be, you know, begging for your help. So thank you very much and have a nice day. And let's see if we have a show. We'll let you know if it's in 2 or 3 weeks, whatever. Like it's sort of a play it by year because there's so much happening right now. And we'll do it when it's most appropriate. And
we just have to get our schedules together. That's all.
Yeah. Exactly. So I'm going to put a live stream stopping right now.
Bye bye.
Live stream.